Jesus was making him acknowledge the good
that was already there.
That's all he had to do. He didn't have to wait for the good. It was omnipresent. Jesus turned every stumbling block into a stepping stone. When he turned the water into wine, what could have been a disastrous day turned into a very happy occasion. He healed a man of leprosy. Now that man certainly seemed to be a stumbling block in the community because people avoided lepers like the plague. Instead of that, he became a stepping stone, an inspiration to everyone that healing was possible, even of an incurable disease. Then he fed the multitude, raised the dead, taught people to love and forgive, and lastly, by his own resurrection, he overcame the greatest stumbling block of all, death. He allowed himself to be put to death to prove to us that there really is no death, that life is eternal. We mourn our loved ones because we believe in death. We believe that's the end of you. We forget that God never saw his child die, that he doesn't know death or separation. We really mourn for ourselves because we want everything to be just the same. This is the most selfish kind of thinking and is a stumbling block to our joy and happiness and to the joy and happiness of those we love, including the loved one who's gone on. When Jesus raised Lazarus from the grave, he was practicing his own resurrection, which was only a few weeks later. Did you know that? Lazarus didn't need to be raised. He'd already passed through the valley. But Jesus needed to prove to himself and to everyone else that even death itself could be overcome. And when we overcome grief, we're helping to overcome the world's belief in death. And in this way, we become a stepping stone instead of a stumbling block. When my sister died, I was absolutely heartbroken because she told me on the night that she passed on that she remembered my face. My husband had just given me an awful beating and my sister had seen my face. And I was really grief-stricken that those were her last words to me, that she had remembered this. And I couldn't seem to stop crying, and it went on for weeks and weeks. And I was used to calling her once or twice every day on the telephone, or she calling me. And I felt that I wanted to call her up and tell her things that happened, and then I'd remember that she was gone. And one day I thought, well, I can still call her up. And I lifted the phone and pretended to talk to her and talked to her about all the things that happened with the children and the guest house and everything I could think of. And I did this for days. And one day the thought came to me, well, if you must talk to your sister, why don't you talk the truth to her? And my sister wasn't interested in Christian Science, so I never got talking much truth to her. So I began to talk the truth to her and tell her that she was never born and she never really died. And I knew that she was at one with God and that God loved her and was meeting all her needs right where she was. And then one day when I was having this conversation with her, I was discussing the 23rd Psalm. And I came to the bit, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear none evil. And the thought came to me, why, death is only a shadow, and a shadow can't hurt you. The shadow of a gun couldn't hurt you, or the shadow of a knife. So the shadow of death had never touched my sister. And I saw that so clearly, and the next thought came was, so it hasn't touched me. It's only a shadow, and that shadow can't hurt me either. and it can't hurt her family. And from then on, I never need to call her again. That was the end of that. I saw it so clearly that it never touched her true selfhood or mine. And then the grief left, and I never had to make those phone calls again. It was a wonderful release. You can do it too. Remember, Jesus said, release him and let him go. We have to do this not only for our loved ones, but for ourselves and the entire world. Mrs. Eddy says in one of her hymns, mourner, it calls you. Come to my bosom. Love wipes your tears all away and will lift the shade of gloom and for you make radiant room amidst the glories of one endless day. Isn't it wonderful that we're privileged to live in an age that has this wonderful truth that Mrs. Eddy has given to the world for us all to prove for ourselves? Mrs. Eddy certainly turned her problems into stepping stones. For instance, to divorce her husband and her day and age certainly looked like a stumbling block to her future. But she turned it into such a stepping stone that she went on to write Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And after that, she established her own church and publishing society, and finally, the Christian Science Monitor, as well as the many people she healed. And this marvelous truth that she's given to the world, she was certainly one of the greatest stepping stones that the world has ever known. She, like the Master, was a wonderful way sure and example for all of us. And she herself has told us in Unity of Good, the chaos of mortal mind is made the stepping stone to the cosmos of immortal mind. The chaos of mortal mind is made the stepping stone to the cosmos of immortal mind. Now, another problem that seems to be great in the world is the belief of loneliness. You know, loneliness is the cause of so many diseases in our world today. And doctors are treating the symptoms. And sometimes we as Christian Scientists treat the symptoms, but we don't get behind it and handle the belief of loneliness. There are so many people living alone, but you can be alone in a crowd, you can be alone in a marriage, but loneliness is a terrible, terrible disease, and it's something that we need to face up to. I've had to face up to it a lot, being alone and having a broken marriage and bringing my children up alone. But I'm going to tell you about two incidents that happened to me many years ago when I was a new student of Christian Science. We were living in Singapore because my husband was in the Royal Marines, and a friend of mine was having a party. She was the first reader of our church. Her husband was not a student of Christian Science, but he was a very big, important businessman. And she had to socialize a lot. And my husband was away in exercise, and she very kindly invited me to this party. It was a garden party. And everybody was dressed up, and practically everybody had a drink in their hand. And I felt like a fish out of water. And I remember thinking, I wish I'd never come here. And I went into the bathroom and was thinking up ways that I can make an excuse to leave and go home, because I didn't really want to be there. When the thought came to me, well, that's very selfish of you. Your friend thought that you were alone, and she was helping you by inviting you to a party. And everybody in this room is the child of God, whether they know it or not. and I can only see them as such. And I thought, we're all one. Alone means all one. And we're all one in God. So I came out into the party, and this young man asked if he could get me a drink, or a cold drink, or whatever. And I said yes. And he brought it back to the table. And he suddenly said to me, are you a Christian Scientist? And I said, well, how did you know that? Did you know that because my friend invited me to the party? He said, no, I didn't know she was a Christian Scientist. He said, but you remind me of my sister-in-law, who's a Christian Scientist, and there's something about you that's the same. And he said, you know, she's always trying to get me interested in Christian Science, but I'm not really interested. But he said, I'd like you to answer a question for me. If I were a student of Christian Science, how would I handle the belief of loneliness?